Can you hear me? Okay. So today I will tell you about work that Philip Candelas and Fernando Rodriguez Villegas and I have been doing for the last about 5 years. The aims of this project, well, we have two here. I present two. One is to explain the fact that periods of Calabi-Yau manifolds, in terms of which we compute many observables in the effective flow energy limit of string theory, encode important arithmetic information about the manifold. The second aim would be to speculate about the role of quantum corrections in mirror symmetry. To clarify that a little bit, what I would do is after I finish this first part about the periods, I will compute the zeta function, and I'll speculate about what we can learn about the zeta function using mirror symmetry and about quantum corrections in the context of number theory. So for definite things, I will consider a one parameter family of quintics, this one, right? Where the xi's are homogeneous coordinates in P4. So we consider, and this psi will be a coefficient that will vary. this manifold M, this Calabi-Yau manifold, has these non-trivial Hodge numbers, H11 is 1, and H21 is 101. As you know, Calabi-Yau manifolds have two types of parameters, the Keter class parameters and the complex structure parameters. And H11 is the number of the formations of the Keter class, and H21 is the number of the formations of the complex structure. I will work also with the mirror of this manifold, W, which one can construct using the Borisov Batyrev construction. But in this case, one can also construct it by taking the quotient of the original quintic by the group of automorphisms of the original quintic, and then blowing up the fixed point singularities. This gamma here is this group of automorphisms of the original quintic M. And zeta is a fifth root of unity. Okay. So today we are going to parameterize the deformations of the complex structure by the periods of the holomorphic 3-0 form. Right? The periods are defined by this formula, and we have one period for each 3 cycle, gamma j. Right, so gamma j is an element in H3 of M. And since M has H1 equals 101, then B3 is 204, right? So B3 is 1, which is the number of 3-0 forms, plus H21, which is 101, plus H12, plus H03, and that gives us 204. Well, the mirror omega has H21 equals 1, and therefore B3 is 4 in that case. So in the for the quintic, we have 204 periods, and for the mirror, there are 4 periods. Now, the periods satisfy differential equations that are known as the Picard-Fox equations. They are generalized hypergeometric functions. And the differential equation is of order B3. Now, that means that for the periods of the quintic, we will have a differential equation of order 204, right? And for the mirror, a differential equation of order 4. Now, the quintic is simple enough that one can actually solve this differential equation of degree 204. What happens is that this differential equation actually breaks into blocks. One block of degree 4, and another one, and then 100 blocks of degree 2. So these 4 periods here, this block of degree 4, and these 4 periods here, I'm going to call the principal periods. They are the same for the quintic and its mirror. Okay, because you can compute the differential equation and you find it's the same differential equation. It has 4 periods in common. And these periods, these 200 periods, they are all classical hypergeometric 2F1 functions. Okay, so this is the second part of this transparency, is to illustrate the principal periods. Right, the differential equation is this. I'm going to use the parameter lambda, which is 1/5 psi^5, and the differential operator is this operator of degree 4. And these are the solutions are hypergeometric functions they are differential, they are hypergeometric functions of F4F3. Okay, this operator is of fourth order, as I just said, and lambda equals to 0 is a regular singular point, and all the indices are 0. That means that the solutions near lambda equals to 0 go like this, right? Asymptotic to 1, logarithm of lambda, logarithm squared of lambda, and logarithm cubed of lambda. And the holomorphic period, the one that's asymptotic to 1, has this form, right? And I'm calling this F0, and pi naught will be this first holomorphic period will be F0, and these are the other solutions, right? We will need this later, so memorize it. So we will need the F's here, actually. These F's are power series. This is the coefficients in front of the series, in front of the logarithms, which are power series. And they will enter into our computation of the number of rational points later. These solutions, I mean, can be found by the method of Frobenius. That is 1/6 solutions of the form of this form, right? I call this the Frobenius period. And instead you solve this differential equation, it's now inhomogeneous, right? A new parameter epsilon here, and you think of the coefficients as being functions of this parameter. and then pi zero here would be the Frobenius period evaluated at epsilon equals to 0. And then the period with the logarithm will be reobtained from the Frobenius period by taking the first derivative with respect to epsilon and then evaluating at epsilon equals to 0 and so on. Okay, so a slight digression before I go on with rational points is about the motivation doing work in the arithmetic of Calabria manifolds. As I said, I mean, this work started about 5 years ago when we started talking with Fernando Rodriguez Villegas. And one of the questions that we had is one that has been mentioned here in other talks a few times now, which is the integrality of the mirror map, right? The last equation in this transparency is the mirror map for the quintic. Lambda is the parameter I just discussed, right? That contains the coefficient in the defining polynomial of the quintic. It's just to remember what it is, right? 5 psi^5, and psi is the coefficient, 5 psi is the coefficient in the polynomial. And Q, this Q here, is this e^2πit, where we think of T as the Keeler class parameter of the quintic. The relation between T and lambda is given by this formula, which is a rational function of two of the periods I just mentioned, we just discussed. So using these formulas, it's not clear at all why one should get integers. So these are the questions that we have had in our mind. What I will say today doesn't answer this question at all. But somebody I think will answer this question. The answer I think will be beautiful. So okay, let me go on now to discuss rational points, and I would like to ask a question that is very strange for a physicist. Right? Consider the quintic and this with its defining polynomial, and let's ask how many solutions that equation has, the equation p equals to 0, with integer x, right? And how, and moreover, how does this number vary with psi? Okay. So what I want to do is to answer this question both for finite fields, not for integers, because, or rational numbers, because that's too hard at this time. So, and I will find formulas for these rational points as functions of psi. So this is a definition of a finite field, for, in case I have physicists in the audience. So a finite field is a field, right, with a finite number of elements, definition. Okay, so but what is interesting is that they are uniquely classified by the number of elements, right, that the finite field has, and which is p to the n, where p is a prime number and n is an integer, positive integer. So this is an example here for S7, right? And we can think, the simplest way to think of the simplest of the finite fields, Fp, is as a set of integers mod p. A result that I'm going to use in a moment is this very simple, very nice result that this that goes back to Fermat, that says that for any integer, a to the p is a mod p. And we can write that, we can put this on the other side, and we can write this in this form, a times a to the p minus 1 equals to 0 mod p. Right. It follows that if a is a to the p minus 1, if a is not 0, a to the p minus 1, right, has to be 1, okay, mod p. There is another also very elementary but very useful fact that I will use again in the next transparency, which says that if you take the sum over a finite field of a to the n, you get either 0 or minus 1, depending on whether p minus 1 doesn't divide n or divides n. And the proof is just it's a one-line proof, right? One considers the sum. And one can show that this equals this other sum with b here for any b in the finite field that is not zero. And then you factor it out, and therefore this implies this result. Okay? So I will use those results now. And I'm going to do a computation mod p for the number of rational points. So let's take x to be in Fp, 5 copies of Fp, and 5 psi to be in Fp. P1 be 5, and let nu sub lambda be the cardinality of the set of solutions of p equals to 0 mod p. Sorry, too many p's. P polynomial equals to 0 mod pi t. Okay? So I will compute this number and mod p with the, using this formula. Right. It clearly gives me what I want, right? If p is 0, if the polynomial p is 0 for some x, then the summand gives me 1. If the polynomial p is not 0 for some x, then this gives me 1 mod p, and the summand gives me 0. Right, so the sum will give me the number of rational points mod p. So I plug in the defining polynomial in here, and I use the formulas I discussed in the previous transparency, expanding expanding the power polynomial p to the prime p prime minus 1. And the result is this. Right, that's what you get. You get that the number of points mod p is this holomorphic period that we saw previously, truncated to the first p over 5, the integer part of p over 5 terms. So the question is that in this, once you find a result like this, the question is why, all right? And how you even figure, I mean, how will you compute this to begin with, right? So this computation, I mean, we started computing this when Fernando gave us, showed us a copy of the book by Clemens, Scrapbook of Chorus, in which, he claims Manin computed this for an elliptic curve, a cubic in P2. And the result is the same. You change three, the all fives here, you change them by threes. Right? And the period that will be the holomorphic field associated to the elliptic curve, to the cubic in P2. Given that, and he used precisely this formula here, right? We generalized it, not just for the quintic, but for, one can compute this for any hypersurface, any canavial that is a hypersenatorial variety, and get a result as a similar result. Okay. As to why one gets this, that's buried deep into the proof of the Weyl conjectures for the zeta function that we'll discuss later. In that book, you find a nice explanation. Clement says that is due to Manin and is quoted as a theorem called the unity of mathematics. It's quite pretty to read, actually. I recommend it. And what he does is that he uses an analogous theorem to the Lefschetz-Pink fixed-form theorem in topology, right? And the function that is used for this fixed-form theorem in this case is the Frobenius map. I don't want to go into that, but it's as a recommended reading. I think it's worthwhile. At least it gives a nice intuitive reason why something like this can happen. Of course, we are not happy with just computing this mod p. We want an exact number. And not only that, we want a formula. So that means that we want to expand this number in powers of the prime of a given prime p, right? Where the coefficients of each power is between 0 and p minus 1, and we evaluate mod p squared, mod p cubed, and so on, right? This is pointing straight into p-adic analysis. Now, at the beginning, we were very clumsy. We just tried to compute this second coefficient by correcting the formula that I had in the previous transparency, and it was indeed clumsy. It took us, several months. We did come up with a very nice answer that I will show you later, too. And then what we did was use a computer to guess an answer, and then we proved it. So if you are a physicist, perhaps a good way to think of a p-adic number is to think that p is a small parameter, and you are expanding in powers of this parameter. That mathematically means that you have a new norm, right? You're defining a norm that I wrote here, right? So you're given a rational number. We write it, as a quotient of two integers. And we can factorize the prime p, right? So m, 0, and 0, and p have no common factors. And we define the p-adic norm of R like this, right? This is the definition of p to the minus alpha, and the p-adic norm of 0 of 0. And as a norm has these properties, except that the p-adic norm satisfies a stronger version of the last inequality. Okay, so a p-adic number, you can think of a p-adic number as a series, bi, p to the I, where I can actually have negative values, right? One can have powers of one, negative powers of p. So say I mean where this can be negative. Okay, so this formula here is the guess we made with using a computer. And for the case in which phi doesn't divide p minus 1. In this expression, these f's are the f's that you saw before in the principal periods. Okay, these series coefficients of the logarithms. Okay, and this lambda, this capital lambda here, is called the Dyke-Mueller representative of this little lambda, and it's Well, it is defined. This is the definition of a Tech-Miller representative of Little Lambda. However, this is what you think. This is precisely the dependence on Little Lambda that you think you should have. If you want your expression, your pionic expression, to be invariant on the changes lambda goes to lambda plus p, right? Because we said that lambda is in fp, right? So this lambda now is in fp. So one can check that that is precisely what one wants in any case. And f0, this notation with this p on the left-hand side means that you are truncating the series to the first p terms. Okay. So to tell you what happens, when phi doesn't divide p minus one, and to write nicer expressions, actually a number theorist, I mean Roger Heath Brown, saw this formula and said that's very ugly. You need to write it as an exact p-adic expression. But for that, I need to tell you a little bit more about the periods. So as I said, as I mentioned, we are going to discover, we are discovering that the number of rational points is determined by the periods, and that there are p3 of these. So the Hodge number, h21, as I said, mentioned, counts the number of parameters on which the complex structure depends. And in simple cases, this corresponds to the number of ways of deforming the defining polynomial. So, and the directions in which this defining polynomial can be deformed will correspond to the monomials. This is the notation I use for monomials, right? Here and here. Subject, I mean, considered subject to some ideal, right? The ideal generated by this derivatives of P. And a special role will be played by the fundamental, or it's called the fundamental monomial, which is the product of all the X's, and which is related by mirror symmetry to the Keller form. Okay, so going back to the one parameter family of monomials, we remember that M has P3 equals to 104, and that W has P3 equals 4. And I want to classify all the monomials in this way. I want to classify all the monomials of degree that is divisible by 5, because those are the ones that will be, that will describe H3 really. And this arrow at this moment means multiplication by Q, this fundamental monomial. And but it also means this is related to really into variations of the Hodge structure of your space. And it also means that you are taking derivatives with respect to the parameter of some differential form. So what I am using here is the relation between monomials and differential forms of the form degree of V, I need to get this right, minus plus 1, I to the X. And the monomial of degree 0, 1 here, when you integrate this, what it will give you is the holomorphic period. And when you multiply this by Q, right, as I said, this is like taking the derivative of this respect of psi, but if you remember, this polynomial is the sum over xi to the fifth minus 5 psi q, right? So when you take the derivative with respect of phi, what you bring up is the fundamental monomial. So this really is representing these variations of the Hodge structure, and then you do it again and again, and then when you get to q to the fourth, you see that that is not independent anymore due to the identifications in the ideal. Right. This here, the first row is associated also with the four principal periods, right? And this differential equation of degree 4. The second row is for the other periods. So we start with monomials of degree 5, right? These two all these 101 monomials, I mean Q together with all the possible XVs, are the deformations of the polynomial, of course. And I will classify them as follows. I'm going to write here V. So apart from the monomial of degree zero, we will also have the others of degree 5, 1. I will write them here for future reference. 3, 1, 1, 0, and 2, 2, 1, 0, 0, and all the others, I mean, of course, some permutations of these. And if you add all the permutations, you will get this. You will get this plus Q. You will get 101. And then there is an extra monomial that is not here, that is of degree 10, that is of the form that has entries 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And that one is in the ideal, right? Using the generators of the ideal, one can show that this monomial is the same as psi, this monomial, which is just a permutation of the original, and so on, right? So it's in the ideal as long as psi to the fifth is 1. So you know, another way to say this is that this produces periods that are zero, right? Except, so the periods for this vanish, right? Vanish for every psi except psi to the fifth equals to 1, which is a singular Calabi-Yau manifold. So I'm going to go back to the formula I had here, and I'm going to rewrite it as a power series in lambda, right? And then I get some series with some coefficients. And the coefficients we found are, one can write them in terms of the coefficients of the holomorphic period, this AM is 5M. Factorial over n factorial to the fifth, right? I don't want you to focus too much into the details of this. I just want to illustrate the fact that that they depend explicitly on how they depend explicitly on these coefficients. And these g's here are just notation now, and they will be related to periodic gamma functions. When one includes the contributions of the other periods, not just of the principal periods that we have in the top row there, then one gets, I am writing here only the contributions that apart from this first term here, that are not constant in lambda. Okay, so the correct answer is what I have here, plus terms that have power, that just powers of p with simple coefficients, actually 1. So that's what one gets, and what one gets here is a sum over all the periods, right? So all the periods contribute to the number of points, and how I defined this k here is p minus 1/5. If we truncate it to the contribution of only the monomial of degree 0, gives us the previous expression, and the others will, the other 200 periods will give us these extra terms. The monomial of degree 10 will have a contribution, but only when psi to the fifth is 1. So as I said, this formula, we conjectured it after lots of computing exercises, but then we proved it. Then we proved it, and what we did is we used a beautiful technique that we learned from Dvorak. There is dual constructed in, he proved one of the Bell conjectures, as I will mention later. And in his proof, he used a character, which is known now as Dirk's character, which is a non-trivial additive character, additive meaning this, of order P, right? It's a character, it's a map from FP to CP star. This CP star is the analog to the complex numbers where the complex numbers that you can, well, they are algebraic completion of the real numbers. So here what you take is the p-adic numbers and you try to close it algebraic and complete it, and this is what you get. The star means that you neglect zero. So this is this character, you can think of it as a p-adic version of a character of a commutative group into C star. So if such a character exists, and this is the bulk of his work really, I mean that such a character exists and provides examples. If it exists, then of course one can consider this sum, right? Where we take P as the defining polynomial for some algebraic variety, and we sum over y over P, over FP. And that of course gives you P prime P times the delta function of the polynomial. Now if you sum again over all the x's here, what you get is the number of points, precisely what you want to compute. Right, so this formula is the one that now we want to use all the time. It's very powerful. If you know this character. But then you do, because you take it from Dirk. And I don't want to get into that because I won't have time. But he, just to give an intuitive idea of what this is, he constructed this character in terms of Gauss sums, which is these are analogs for finite fields of the gamma function, right? And you in terms of this, one can expand the character in this form, right? This is the formula that one can use in this formula here is the one that one uses here to compute the number of rational points. Right. Using all these considerations and taking those characters from the literature, we proved this formula and we wrote it in this form, right? Now with all the terms, I have neglected terms like p to the 4 before. So, and these betas, these are coefficients that are given in terms of all the periods. These coefficients, gamma, it just counts the number of permutations for each of these cases. Okay, so to note, just what we need to note here is first that these betas are given, as I just mentioned, in terms of Gauss sums, or equivalently in terms of p-adic gamma functions. When phi doesn't divide p minus 1, we only get the contribution from the fundamental monomial. And explicitly, just again to illustrate the what happens to order p, right, these first two terms we have seen before, but we haven't seen this one explicitly, right? And these are the periods for these other 200 periods that we have in the family of quintics. Okay. This delta just means that it appears only when phi divides p minus 1. Okay, then to finish this part, the 10th order polynomial, the last line there, as I mentioned, corresponds to a period that is zero everywhere, except when psi to the fifth is one. For these values, the variety, as I mentioned, is not smooth. anymore, and it has, one can check that it has 125 isolated singularities that are double points, and these are in the physics literature, they're called conical singularities. And so the calculation for the number of rational points makes sense even for these singular cases. So this is something that I need to emphasize now. I mean, this formula here that one has for using Dork's character is a formula that one can use even in cases that you have a singular manifold. Okay. In that case, we see that the contribution of that monomial when psi to the fifth is one is it appears at order p squared and is of this form. Okay. So now I want to, having calculated this number of rational points, now the natural thing to do is to compute the zeta function, which is really the generating function for this number of points. So I'm going to, instead of working with nu lambda, which I was working before, I'm going to work with this N, capital N, right, which is the number of projective solutions, right, of the equation P equals to zero, over FP to the R, right? The computation I did before was over FP, but using again Dork's character, one can generalize that result and compute the number of points for the finite field FP to the R. And then with that, one can form the zeta function, right? So this zeta function, I mean, one can see, for example, that if if N is just, can you see that? This is, yes. So if N is a point, then of course, then the number N to the R, N sub R is always one for all R, right? So in that case, what you get is that the zeta function for a point is 1/(1 − t). Right? This is the global. This is an example of this, which I should call the local zeta function. Right? Then if I take the product of all the primes to compute a global zeta function and evaluate each prime at p to the minus s, what you get is the Riemann zeta function. So what one wants to do is this exercise for more for things that are not trivial, like the quintic or elliptic curves or any algebraic variety, really. Okay. So this zeta function was the subject of these beautiful conjectures, and the proof of this was, as you all know, a highlight of last century's mathematics. But and these conjectures are, well, there are three conjectures. The first one is the rationality, which is due to Dork. And it says that the zeta function is a rational function of t. That conjecture is true even if the algebraic variety is singular, okay? Even if your space, your space is singular. The other two are not, okay? You have to have a smooth one. The second one, the functional equation, and it's due to Grothendieck, says that the zeta function evaluated at this, right, p to the d times t, is related to the zeta function of t, right, except for this coefficient here, this coefficient and this factor of t to the chi, where chi is the order characteristic and d is the real dimension of m. And then is the Riemann hypothesis due to the Lie, which says that the polynomials in the numerator and the denominator of the zeta function factorize over the integers into a number of other polynomials. And Pi here is a polynomial, as I said, with coefficients in z of degree di, with di is the ith Petty number. And furthermore, the conjecture includes, says something about the roots of these polynomials. In particular, for Pi, the root, the norm of P alpha, of alpha ij, is P to the I halves. Okay? P zero is always this, and P two is always that. Okay? So, of course, given this, one can immediately write down a zeta function for the quintic or for any example. And what we don't know from this is what the coefficients of these polynomials are. And what we can do with the computation, with the computation that I showed you before, is to find those coefficients. So, so the zeta function for the quintic and then its mirror is there as follows. So, as I said, we work over fp to the r, and we let n r denote the number of projective solutions to the equation p equals to zero. The zeta function, this is just, we need to have the definition there again. And as we saw before, we can decompose these numbers into the sum of two contributions, the contribution for the fundamental monomial here, and the contribution for the due to the other monomials. And with that, you get that the zeta function is what we have here, right? The denominator is very simple, right? And the numerator is not so simple. It depends on these complex structure parameters, right? And R0 here is a polynomial of degree 4. The reason we have two independent coefficients is because of the functional equation here. And this polynomial is quartic for all psi's except for psi to the fifth is 1. Then it's different. Then, as I said, the where conjectures do not apply. So this form is not the form of the zeta function at the conical singularity. So for the mirror, one can do the same exercise, and one gets this result as expected. And these, since we have these common periods, we call them the principal periods, these are zero. And these are zero here are the same. Shabnam Kadir, who is sitting somewhere here, did this same computation for an example, for the two-parameter example, and this same feature appears that you have principal periods, and you have common factors in the zeta function for the manifold and its mirror. Okay. Let's see. I was going to say something about this piece here, but I think I'm going to skip that. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the some speculations and the conical singularities. Okay. So let me discuss now the zeta function for the conical. When you take the results that we have for the number of points, this is what you get. This is, since I didn't want to have a transparency or clutter with things that we don't know what they are, I wrote only one case, the case that it says here that is for rho equals to 1. That means that I am working, let me define that rho. So rho is the minimum number, such that phi divides p to the r minus 1. Okay, and you can check that rho can only be 1, 2, and 4. So I'm doing it. So the zeta function is slightly different for each value of rho. So what I want to say is the same. It doesn't matter really. So I've chosen rho equals to 1. Okay. So what happens at the conical singularity is that the polynomial of degree 4 that we had before collapses into a polynomial of degree 3. That's because one of the roots is 0. Happens to vanish, and then it collapses into a polynomial of degree three, sorry, and then it factorizes into a linear term and a quadratic polynomial. Then the polynomial of degree 200 that we have here for the other monomials collapses too into a polynomial of degree 100. Actually, the one has just a linear factor to the 100. And this, the denominator stays, as, except for this piece, which is the contribution that I mentioned before. Is this the contribution that appears at the conical? Is this here? Okay. It, when you put it in the definition of the zeta function, this is what you get. Okay. Okay. This AP here, this coefficient. Here happens to be the pth coefficient in the Q expansion of an eigenform G, defined by Shen. And it is the unique cusp form of weight 4 for the group gamma 0,25. But that's, when we first saw this, we thought this was very interesting. But it is interesting, but in one way it isn't, and it is, and in another it isn't. The reason it's not that interesting is because this is related, this singular space is related to a rigid Calabi-Yamal manifold through what physicists would call a conical transition, which is what you do is you take the singular space and you blow up, right, the singularities, and what you get is a rigid Calabi-Yamal manifold. So what is happening is this, right? We started with a family of quintics, and 125 three spheres will be blown down, right? But only 100 to get, and then we get 125 singularities. Of course, only 101 of these three spheres are independent. So 24 four cycles are created, right? Like this. And that is the explanation of this term in the denominator. Remember that the even cohomology, the denominator of the zeta function for a manifold of dimension 3 is associated to the even cohomology, right? So this factor here is precisely the fact that is related precisely to that, the fact that you get, you know, 24 four cycles. So this is what you have at that stage. And now when you blow up, you blow up the singularities, what you need to add is a factor, since you're going to blow up 125 nodes with P1, what you add is a factor of 1 minus PT to 125, right? And of course, there are cancellations now, and you get the zeta function, which is the zeta function for the for Chatzian's rigid Calabi-Yamal manifold. And this, there are the fact that this is modular is associated to the modularity conjectures for rigid Calabi-Yamal manifolds. So the big question here is whether there is modularity, one can ask now whether this is because one has a rigid Calabi-Yamal manifold. In this case, it is. But it will be, now, it is an interesting question is to figure out whether this is a feature of a conical singularity or not. Right. And this is something that is being investigated. I mean, Sharman Kadir has done something in her example for the two-parameter case. Okay, and let me discuss now a little bit, speculate now, a little bit about the zeta function and mirror symmetry. Okay. So again, I put here the definition, right, so we have it in view, the definition of the zeta function. Now, the problem with the zeta function is that it doesn't respect mirror symmetry in a way, right? It depends on the complex structure parameters, but the Kähler class parameters are not algebraic parameters. They are not in the zeta function. Right. So there is an asymmetry in this definition of the classical zeta function with respect to mirror symmetry, right? So the denominator is of degree B3, depending on the complex structure of M, and the denominator is of degree 2H11 plus 2, and it doesn't, all you know about the even cohomology is the Betti numbers from zeta function, right? You don't know anything else. And of course, here I just rewrite, I write again, for you, the zeta function and for the quintic, and the zeta function for the mirror of the quintic. This here is just the contributions of the this 200 polynomials. I have just rewritten those in a nice way. I mean, they factorize over the integers like this. But the question is, what is there a relation, say, between this polynomial of degree 4, say, which is which is associated to the four principal periods, and this denominator here, which through the mirror map we know is intuitively, at least, you will think that through the mirror map this are zero and this polynomial in the denominator of degree 4 will be related. And that is, at this moment, work in progress. But what I can tell you is the following. There is, when one asks this question, right, the first thing that comes to your mind is the large complex structure, because that's how the mirror map was found, right, or is found. But there is no such thing as a finite field, right? At least not obviously, right? So all we have is the following, that nice relations are true in the five-adic limit. So more precisely, for all p, for primes p, and for psi, what you get is that this r0 is precisely this other polynomial of degree 4 plus terms of order 5 squared. And similarly for the other piece, right, the other more complicated piece here, right, this one, this that was of degree 200, if you compare it with 1 minus pt to the 100 times minus p squared t to the 100, what you get is that they are the same up to factors of order 5 squared. And this is what you find, right? Therefore, what you show is that the zeta function for the mirror of the quintic is the inverse of the zeta function of the quintic plus terms of order 5 squared. That also brings to mind the result that one has for quantum corrections to the classical Yukawa coupling, right, in the case of the quintic, in which the ratio of the Yukawa coupling of the quantum corrected coupling over the classical coupling is 1 plus terms of order 5 squared, right? Which is true because it has been shown that 5 cubed divides nk k to 3 for each k. So the question is what is it that one wants with this, right? One cannot say that the zeta function of the mirror is the inverse of the original space, because that would imply, that doesn't go well with the definition of the classical zeta function. That would imply that these numbers would be negative, which just doesn't make any sense. Right. So what one wants to do is to find a way of introducing the Kenner class parameters into a new zeta function, right? And of course, one cannot do that just like that because of what I said before. Keller class parameters are not algebraic, right? But they are algebraic in the mirror. So that's what we want to use to probably to write down a new zeta function that will have the information for both. I don't want to speculate much more than that because it gets very thin. Let me just conclude. The question now is, what's the program? I'll show you an example, right? Really, quintic. Some features of the quintic is more or less clear that are general, some aren't. What is very powerful is this formula that I show you in terms of the dual character. One can compute now the number of points using this character for many examples, as Shavnam is doing it, has done it for a two-parameter example and its mirror. And the result there is the results there are very interesting because you have other kinds of singularities that one would like to study too. So so that's one thing. So one can produce examples and try to get at least an intuitive idea of what happens with these coefficients in particular. But moreover, something very interesting would be to the study of the singularities and to make conjectures of what the zeta function should be for the singular cases, using more or less a procedure, using a procedure similar to what we have here for the conifold, and studying at the same time what happens to the geometry at this, near the singularities. Right. So in a program in which one wants to study these zeta functions for singular cases, one wants to start in an easier, with an easier case. One can study the K3 example. One can actually study K3 using Dolk formula in general. That's also working in progress with Chuck Doran and Sharnam and Philip and Sergei Cherkis. But in the end, one also wants to discuss mirror symmetry. So the way I want to formulate it is one wants to implement the mirror map in the zeta function. Right. So I think that I'm finished.
So you explained to us about the relation between the counting points on a general member of this one parameter family and the conifold singularity.
Yes, for the one parameter family of quintics, yes.
Yeah. Say you didn't know that weight 4 form which was found by Chachun. Yeah, this form you wrote down. Would you be able to cover that from your calculations?
No. Of course, we didn't. I mean, we are not number theorists. We saw these numbers, and we had no idea what we were looking at. Actually, it was Fernando Rodriguez Villegas who pinned this down. Right. So we have, and to this day, this is not something that I really know how to do, and we always rely on a number theorist with us to do that, and when you say, can you recover this?
You've done all these calculations,
yeah?
And then you somehow want to specialize to this one point, and you want to come up with this weight 4 form out of your calculations. Can you see that somehow?
Well, I mean, we have formulas for this, and you do have this. You just write them down, and you can sort of in the computer see what they are for each prime number, and you make a list. Yes. But this is where we were just looking at what it was until Fernando pinned it down. But if we hadn't known that, eventually this is something that would be discovered, right? I mean, with the right techniques. Yeah. Computer the what?
You can sort of check this experimentally by just looking at the multiplicative structure of these numbers that you compute, because you expect that this form is a Hecker eigenform. And so you can sort of guess whether there is a form and what it is that the weight is,
okay,
the level might be.
Okay,
so this is sort of an experimental way of determining this.
Okay.
Now, have you computed sort of the degree 6 would be the simple
for the what 6? For the
degree 6 one parameter family. 1, 1, 1.
There's
two.
A word I'm missing. The sexic.
Yeah. Right. That's a computation that you could do a similar.
I still don't care. I'm sorry. Which sex thing? Oh, for all the one-parameter families.
Yeah.
If we have computed this, we've done this computation for other one-parameter families.
Okay.
Fernando did it for the coniform singularities of the one-parameter families.
Do you have modular forms for those?
And yes, for all of them. Yeah.
Okay. That's my question.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, I just like to remark something. I have an approach to this exact question using motifs.
The approach to which exact question?
This is the quintics and then one parameter. Actually, I have 147 families.
Yes.
Yeah.
One parameter, 147 one parameter?
Families of weighted projective hypersurfaces, Calabi-Yau three-fold.
Well, actually, for any Calabi-Yau manifold that is defined as a hypersurface or a toric variety, you can constrain to the one parameter.
Yes, yes, that's
true. One can compute there.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So the point here is I use motifs to do this calculation.
Okay.
So Shabnam, Kadia, and I have a joint project somehow establish a dictionary between my motifs and your approach.
Okay.
Could you maybe show this very puzzling formula with the periods and the derivative of the periods to count the number of points?
You want the formula for?
That's in the beginning of your talk. Oh, it was a very, very mysterious, very intriguing formula.
That one. When five.
That one, yeah. Uh-huh. After that, there was a proof using the Dvorak character. In which form does this formula survive the proof?
I couldn't hear the question.
Okay. So this formula is very interesting. It was discovered by computer search.
Yes.
After that, in your talk, you gave a proof.
We proved it, yes.
Is it a proof for this exact formula?
Yes. When 5 doesn't divide p minus 1, yes. Except that I showed a different version, right? This is what we found. And then you check that these betas, when you can go back from this. Using Dog's character, you end up here, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and then you go back and you expand in powers of p, and then you compare with this, and you get precisely this.
And the big O of p to the 5, does it survive, or does it become 0?
Which one?
Big O of p to the 5 at the end.
This one?
Yeah.
What happens is that the number of points here is smaller. Has to be smaller than p to the 5, right? So the other terms.
That term is actually 0 then.
Sorry?
This O to the 5 is actually 0.
It's not 0 because if you expand, there are contributions to each of these that have when you expand this,
okay.
Actually, so, there are some contributions they cancel.
Yeah, so it should be this four-dimensional sub thing, call it the motive, and the rest.
Yeah.
And so the sub thing should have a 0 there.
The what?
The correction in the p to the 5 is coming from the other periods. The
really yes, it contains the it contains. Okay. So this f4 before, right? This f4. Remember the principal periods, right? There are only 4, and there are only 4 of these f's.
Yeah, by the way, you forgot to mention f4.
So there is no f4, right? But from the Frobenius period, you can keep on constructing higher and higher derivatives, right, of this. And those are f4, for example, will correspond to something that we will call pi 4, right? That will have a logarithm to the fourth, right? And it will be related to the fourth derivative of this Frobenius period with respect to epsilon, evaluated at epsilon equals to 0. And in this particular case of the quintic, that pi 4 is actually a solution of the differential equation L pi equals to a constant. Okay. And yeah, so is this what you wanted to know?
You don't have another F5 and F6 and so on.
Yes, and F4 is solved. Okay. So
it does show up in your formulas?
So pi four, it would be the derivative of this Frobenius period, the fourth derivative, right, of the Frobenius period with respect to the fourth, evaluated at epsilon equals to zero, and so on, right? And the higher order contributions here are these higher derivatives of the Frobenius period. Okay? Yeah.
If not, let's thank the speaker again. So text of the start at 5. From 5 o'clock we start again. Okay.